Hey, what's up, guys? This is Zach.
And I'm Justin.
And welcome to The Other Film Guys, episode number 76, 9 days. We're talking a recap of our favorite films of the year. Now, granted, we haven't seen every movie that came out for 2021, but I'm pretty confident in my pick. I don't know if you are. I'm pretty sure you are.
I'm pretty strong in mine.
We'll get to that.
Indeed. What are some ones that you didn't get to?
You know, I have a list still. I know that it's not going to be my favorite, but I do kind of want to see. I want to hate watch being the Ricardos.
Okay.
I was not able to see The Tragedy of Macbeth or The Souvenir Part 2.
Macbeth is like probably like my number one film that I haven't seen. Like, yeah. I really want to watch that one. I was looking the other day to see if it was playing anywhere near us, and literally there's nowhere in Houston where it's playing.
It's playing at the Alamo.
Yeah.
But that's like an hour.
Exactly. So I was like, okay, well, guess I'm not seeing that anytime soon. I guess I have to wait for VOD for that one.
Yeah, I think January 14th, I want to say, it's okay. Going on Apple TV Plus.
Great. Okay, cool. Can't wait to watch that because...
Yeah, me too.
Denzel is the GOAT. So is Joel Cohen. And so is Frances McDormand. So...
However, I have heard that it's a pretty lackluster Macbeth interpretation.
Really?
From a few different people, but it's... Your mileage will vary. Mm-hmm. I'm expecting to kind of love it, but...
I don't know. I feel like, I mean, are Shakespeare adaptations like that, though? Like, some people are going to jive with it more, and some are just going to be like, eh.
Yeah, but then you also have Throne of Blood, who, like, pretty much everyone who sees that is like, this is the goddamn
goat. Throne of Blood does go hard, though.
Yeah, goes really hard. It's been compared, or brought up in conversation, at least, when everyone has been talking about Tragedy of Macbeth. But we'll see.
Mm-hmm.
We will see.
Indeed.
With our eyes on screens. But again, we're not talking about Macbeth too much. Well, I guess what have you not seen that you still...
So, like, Memoria is the number one movie that comes to mind after Tragedy of Macbeth. Those two I definitely wanted to see. And I know there were a couple other ones, but just, like, right off the bat, those two were... if I could help it, they would be the first two that I watched. So
okay.
And I think I have a way to watch Memoria.
Yeah, I think I sent it to you.
Yes, yeah. Yes, you did. You legally sent it to me.
Legally, of course.
But yeah, so, because I mean, I didn't check the numbers of like how many 2021 movies I watched. If I had to guess, it'd probably range around like 40.
Okay, 45. I have 76 total on my 2021 list.
Yeah, I knew you watched way more than I did.
That's the standard for every year, pretty much. I waste way more time on movies.
That'll be me in a few months once I finally fuck off from college.
Yes. I'll
be able to watch some.
Can't wait for that.
Same.
But for your boredom era.
Ready for it. I'm ready for it. I don't care. Ready for it.
But again, so this week we are talking about my personal favorite film of the year, 9 Days, directed by Edson Oda. Now, this is listed as a 2020 movie because it premiered at Sundance 2020, but it didn't actually release anywhere else until 2021, so fuck all y'all. It's a 2021 movie.
That's fair.
And I think it fit pretty nicely into... Do you ever feel like there's like an overarching theme with movies? Like, you see a movie and they're like, oh yeah, this came out in 2020 or this 2021. I feel like that because I originally had... The Father in my 2021 list.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was like, it doesn't feel like a 2021 movie. Yeah, that's a 2020 movie.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
especially with that one, I don't know. Like, I just remember it. Wasn't it also like in the 2020 Academy Awards or something?
It
like,
was because they had extended the window through, I think, February or March
So that's another reason why, at least for me, why that one always felt more like a 2020 movie.
Yeah.
It already had its awards run. You know what I mean?
Exactly. And that's why I kind of didn't feel right with it on my list, so mm-hmm. I had that removed. And of course, I think I do. I should say I don't have Inside on my list.
I noticed
which probably
most people don't have that on there.
I mean, I have it for a reason. It just because I guess it just doesn't like necessarily feel like a movie. Like if I ranked it among everything else, I don't think it necessarily fits as well.
Mm-hmm.
It's more of a personal decision for me, I think, but. I would say that's probably like the movie that I enjoyed the most and had the most connection with, I guess, mm-hmm. aside from 9 Days.
It was an event. yeah, when it came it out. Was. Everybody watching it, great music.
I watched it, I think, 6 times last year.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, you and a bunch of other people I follow on Letterboxd, it's rated, like, very, very highly.
Yeah. So, I think it's one of the highest rated films on Letterboxd.
Which, you know, why it kind of surprised me that I hadn't really seen it really on anybody's lists. I was like, it came out this year, right? My perception of time is so fucked up. I'm like, this happened, right?
Yeah. But anyways, yeah, I really enjoyed this movie. And I was kind
of... It was an excellent decision.
Thank you.
For you.
I was nervous that you weren't going to like it. And I don't know why. I always feel that way with movies that I really love. I'm like, I'm going to show this to someone, but if they don't love it, I'm going to feel horrible.
No, I feel like you and I feel like we generally have, you know, the same tastes in movies, I would say. Usually what you like, I end up at least liking, you know, yeah. If not feeling
it's pretty rare that we have, like, polar opinions on movies.
I can't even remember the last one, the last movie where...
I don't know.
Just had different reactions to it.
I
couldn't even think of one.
I can't.
We just have good taste, man.
We do.
That's all it is.
Top tier.
Yes. And like, I agree with you on this movie. Like, I didn't really have a whole lot of interest in watching it before you had suggested it, before you like talked about watching it. Again, it was just one of those movies where I hadn't really seen a whole lot of people talking about it. So I was like, you know. I don't know. Maybe the hype just hadn't caught up to me yet.
I mean, that's the thing with this movie. And one thing that I definitely wanted to bring up is...
It's a very low-key movie.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
A similar thing, vibe, really, to The Father. Both distributed by Sony Pictures Classics. I saw a post recently that said...
I know what you're
gonna say. Sony Pictures Classic, and it was like, 80% of movies that have this in front of it will be a masterpiece that was not marketed.
And why is that so true?
Yeah, so exactly. True. Like... I saw maybe like a few pieces of this like late last year and then in this year as people were talking about like Sundance from 2020 and talking about leading up to its release, and that had generated some interest to me. And I don't know. I just one day I just was really interested in seeing it, and I love Winston Duke. Mm-hmm. And Benedict Wong. Zazie Beetz is usually hit or miss for me.
Well, that's one thing that I can say about this movie is I really love how, because I feel like, you know, Benedict Wong nowadays is probably in mainstream culture is probably known for as like this running gag in the MCU, right?
Yeah.
Just popping in and out of the movies.
As Wong. Which yeah. I love that Wong, Benedict Wong.
And like, it's cool to watch, I guess, but I don't know, like eventually you'd like to see him have something to do because he's a great actor. You know what I mean?
He is.
And I feel like this movie really gives him an opportunity to shine. And Winston Duke as well. Like, I can't tell you. The only roles that come to mind for Winston Duke, of course, he's in Black Panther, right?
Yeah, he's in Black Panther. He's in Infinity War a little bit.
He's also in Us.
Yeah, which that's Peele's what movie. I always think about. I always think about him in Us. I think that's really it, though. Like, Black Panther was...
More or less the role that like kicked him off, right?
I think that was his first movie, even.
Oh, nice.
Let me see. Yeah, Black Panther, and then Infinity War, and then Us. He was in Endgame in the last little montage.
Mm-hmm.
9 days, and then he was in Spencer Confidential, that one Netflix movie that no one really watched.
I totally forgot about that.
Then he was in the Chadwick Boseman tribute. He's going to be in Wakanda Forever, and then he has 2 movies... that are in the works, apparently. But yeah, Black Panther was like his first film.
So this is very much early stages of his career.
Or like, how did he get started? Because he's great.
He is great. And that's another great thing about this movie is, as I said, the most recent performance of his that comes to mind is his performance in Us. And in that movie, you know, he's like the goofy dad. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
telling dad jokes type of vibe. Like,
loved his character, though.
He's great. Yeah, I loved watching him. But this performance is... pretty opposite from that performance. No,
yeah, incredibly opposite.
Yeah.
He's not goofy or necessarily funny at all. I mean, he's funny in a low-key way.
Yes,
where he's not trying to be funny.
And the word that keeps coming to mind when I think about this performance of his is calculating, because every move that he makes, every like facial expression, every inflection in his voice, it just feels like there's purpose behind it. And I feel like this like early reputation of his that he has is kind of like he's like this, he has this big booming voice. You know what I mean? Obviously in Black Panther uses that beautifully.
Umbafu.
Right.
Or whatever he says.
Yeah. And love and, that. And in this one, he does he does go there, but he does it in very like carefully selected moments. You know what I mean? Whenever he like bursts out in like this like moment of rage at Benedict Wong, and I think Zazie Beetz is there as well.
Yeah. That's the first time we ever see him like lash out.
And before that, he's very not monotone, but very toned down.
Yeah.
Very toned down. And again, he doesn't blow up, but he like
restrained.
It's very very, I think it's restrained is the word.
Yes. Yeah. That is the word.
My brain was like, wait.
And in my brain, I was like, this is right, right? No, this can't be right. Oh, well, go with it.
Complicated airflow.
Yeah.
My friend.
So he actually started out, he was a stage actor.
I can totally see that.
He is from Trinidad and Tobago. And he got his start because he actually befriended Lupita Nyong'o at Yale.
Which I think she was also a stage actress, actor as well. I think that's how she started, if I'm not mistaken.
I pulled up her Wikipedia real quick. She started as a PA on some movies, and then she went to pursue a master's at Yale, and then after that, she was in 12 Years a Slave.
Okay.
So I don't know if she's done work. She was in TV. She was in a Kenyan show called Suga.
Okay. Suga?
In the late aughts, early teens of 2012, or 2012 is when that show sort of ended.
Okay. I can totally see Winston Duke on a stage, especially that he's voice got the way he can project.
He's got the chops for it, as they say.
Absolutely. And that's what this movie like shows, is that he absolutely has the chops
to
play.
They talk about that, too. His character, he was a stage actor in college?
Yes, yeah.
Or high school, something like that?
Yeah, it was in some academic setting. But yeah, so it's kind of meta in that way.
Yeah.
And again, towards, you know, literally towards the very end of the movie is another moment where he doesn't blow up, but like unleashes himself, I want to say.
Yeah. Reciting some Walt Whitman. I don't remember what the exact poem is, but I love that sequence. It's so beautiful. I don't know like what version of this I originally saw, but I feel like not just the end, but like it was just so much cleaner. I guess maybe the copy that I had wasn't the best legal copy to watch.
Like visually cleaner?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I think there might have been some like editing changes or some scenes that maybe were added, because there were moments where I was watching this. I rewatched it yesterday so I could be a little bit more fresh on it. And there were scenes in it, or at least moments, that I was like, oh, I don't remember that. And it was just like, oh, okay, that's really cool. I don't remember what exactly, but it's just like moments around the house. Feels like there was just stuff that I originally missed on. And I mean, this is the third time that I've seen the movie. And so I think it did change from the original version that I saw and the actual official release.
And I guess it didn't have any like negative impact.
No, at all. Definitely not. I don't think it necessarily had any impact per se.
Mm-hmm.
I still enjoyed it all the same.
Okay. Yeah, no, the movie was incredible to watch. It was, the word that keeps coming to mind is joy. It was a very joyous movie to watch.
Yeah.
So, and I mean, the number one thing that stands out to me as far as like sequence wise in the movie, I mean, it has to be the final wishes for everybody.
Those are so beautiful.
Knocked me out watching that first one with the beach.
I love the beach one, but I burst into tears every time I see the bike riding scene.
Yes. See that. That one levels me emotionally as well, but just like, I don't know, it was something about that beach scene and like seeing his feet on the ground in the sand. I could almost feel it on my feet.
And
you know what I mean?
He was just so like overwhelmed. He like starts like screaming out, and like he's like a little kid.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just like having fun for like the first time, it feels like.
And I absolutely love Winston Duke's character. Just not, he's not like, I don't know, like patting himself on the back or anything for doing this for these people, or these souls, I guess you could say. And just the way he just stands there and he's just kind of like silently pushing the water along.
Yeah.
To keep that effect going. And I don't know, just seeing how hard he was trying to like make this happen for this person leveled me.
Yeah. And I think they mentioned he's the only interviewer that does final wishes for candidates. Other ones just let them go. And I think we see some of them there, like Benedict Wong, his character, Keo, walks past them as they're like walking in the desert, and then he like looks back and they're just gone.
Yeah. Yeah.
I really love this movie. Also in preparation for this, I watched some of Edson's short films and commercials because this was his feature debut.
Incredible.
Yeah. How do you get this as your feature debut?
Ah, fuck off. Give me a break.
But he's done a few commercials. He did a couple like Moleskine commercials. He did this one music video. I don't remember who the artist was, but it was really interesting. It was like, it was the three artists of the band and they were like changing. It was a countdown. And they were constantly like changing how they were, like they were the countdown, they were the numbers of a clock. It was really interesting, really cool, really visual. I think that's what I really like about Edson. Like this, with this movie and his other short films, they're very visually appealing. He definitely knows how to make things pop out on the screen. That scene, the bike ride scene, which I love that song that plays. It's an original song, and I think it should be nominated. No joke.
I love that it's an original song, because the first thing I did when it ended,
look it up.
Yes, I looked it up and put it on my Spotify.
Yeah. Beautiful. No, it was written for the movie Eona Rua, Daniel Pinto, who did the score for this as well, and it was incredible. I think it might be my favorite score of the year, to be honest, as well.
Fantastic.
I love that song. That scene was, he had a whole short film that was basically that as well. It was called The Sensorial Ride. It's on Vimeo, I think. And it's much more fleshed out in this, and much more emotionally impactful as well, since you have the story of that character. I'm not going to remember their names, unfortunately, but she was very well acted as well. She was like the romantic one who professed her love to Will in the movie.
Yeah. Winston Duke's character. Yeah.
Yeah.
Will.
Will is Winston Duke. Yeah. But I forget what the actual, like, the candidate's name was, or the actress. Only ones I knew were Zazie Beetz, Bill Skarsgård, and Tony Hale.
Who was Tony Hale?
Tony Hale was the one who always wanted to...
Was he the guy who just wanted vibes? Yeah. Good vibes?
Yeah.
Beer and hanging out?
That's Forky from Toy Story.
Nice.
And Buster from Arrested Development.
Am I bad for having never seen either?
For Arrested Development, yes.
Okay.
That's you should fair. Watch Arrested Development. It's a good show.
Azula's seen that. She says it's funny.
It's really funny.
It's okay, so the actress's name is Ariana Ortiz. And her character's name was Maria.
Yes.
I really loved in that specific scene, I love how they like surround her in projectors. You know what I mean? And watching and hearing them kind of roll up, it was great. I mean, just beautiful to watch, beautiful to listen to. And you feel like you're on that bike with her.
Yeah.
Riding through.
Apparently the projections were done in, I think, Brazil.
Nice.
Which I think is where Edson Oda is from. I think he's Brazilian and Japanese.
Okay.
Yeah.
Heck yeah. Another part that I really liked about the movie was its use of color. I really love how when Winston Duke is watching all the TVs of, you know, everybody that he's chosen who is worthy to live, you know, pretty much in his opinion, his professional opinion. I just really love how that's laid out. And whenever he's got one of them blown up, like blown up wide, it'll just, when it stops playing, it'll just like wash him in this like blue, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Especially with Amanda, who unexpectedly dies. She's this, I guess, spoiler alert. It's at the beginning of the movie though.
Yeah.
Who is this person that he chose to live. And
the only one that he's attached to as well.
Yeah.
And he doesn't really give a shit about everyone else.
I don't want to say he doesn't give a shit, but he definitely isn't as attached to them.
Yeah.
Cause they're, I feel like he's definitely sympathetic towards like Rick, the one of the other people in his TVs who's getting bullied.
He's a bullied, troubled kid.
There's also Fernando. Yeah. police officer who was shot and paralyzed. Like, I feel like he is sympathetic towards them, but Amanda was just different for him.
I think what is portrayed in the movie is once Amanda dies, he can't, I don't think he wants to care about any of the rest of them.
And, that's fair.
And have that loss again, those feelings. And so he's just like detaching himself from everyone else. But I think he did always have an affinity towards Amanda. He's the only one who ever remembered her in life, mm-hmm. or remembered him in life.
Right, right. Which I thought made for like a really good subplot to the movie was him not really understanding. What I really love about what that subplot is, it's kind of ambiguous whether she did purposefully kill herself or not.
She did. I think so.
She did, but yeah, but at the beginning, you know, she's driving and you know she screams out no. You know, like she lost control of the car or something, and like our confusion is his confusion as well. Like he's trying to figure out like whether she actually meant to do this or not, and how it's revealed that, you know, she wrote a whole note to her family and he didn't even see it. You know what I mean? Like this person that he was watching closely and he didn't see her write out this note. I feel like also had, you know, a huge impact on him as well. And that might have been right before where he first bursts out initially at Benedict Wong. And I think it was the other interviewer that he brought with him.
That's not the first time he lashes out. I think that's like about maybe like halfway into the movie.
Because I think he like actually yells at them to like get out of his house or whatever.
He does not have a good reaction to that.
Which
I mean, who could?
Right, right. Yeah. So I thought that made for a very good subplot to the movie, and one that was like meaningful to him and his overall arc as a character. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. No, I really loved the character work in this.
And let me just say, I really love watching the POVs in the TVs.
Yeah.
Like it was really, what's the word? Interactive, I guess. I felt like I was definitely,
I liked following along in their stories.
Yeah. And I really loved how when Amanda would play the violin, because that was like her thing. She was a violin prodigy.
Yeah.
And I really loved how when she would play, like you would see like this like flare like in the top right corner.
Which
of
we
the
later find out is her tears.
Yeah, she's
her crying.
That's the only time she would cry was when she would play the violin. And I would just love seeing that small detail on that screen. And there are some moments in the movie where Winston Duke is like carefully placed in the frame to where he's kind of like in that space where the tear forms on the screen. And I don't know, to me, that just really spoke volumes, you know, visually.
Yeah.
And just anytime he would be watching any of them, like it was very intimate for me to watch that, watching him watch that. You know what I'm saying?
It was. I mean, we're the watchers watching him, who is the watcher of them.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So yeah, it was great. I enjoyed watching him watch people.
I have to say, I really love Benedict Wong in this movie as well. And I loved the one thing that was funny to me. It was really funny was when he showed up to the wedding. He was like, are you going to dress up?
Yeah.
Like, I'm fine as is.
Mm-hmm.
And then as soon as like the wedding is over, Winston's out.
And I really like that. Like there are some interviewers who get involved with their people like that. And for him, like for Winston Duke, I don't know. Like he just doesn't, I'm sure he's happy for that person, but
yeah,
it's
like we said, I mean, like he's still involved in their lives. He's still watching them, but like, how can he get attached when he lets something with Amanda go so under the radar?
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like there's anything he could have done other than prepare.
Which is what Wong tells him.
Yeah.
Benedict Wong tells him the whole time. Like, what would you have done even if you knew what she was going to do? So, yeah, definitely.
It's that curse, knowing something will happen and not being able to do anything about it.
Absolutely.
And I think that's another thing that drives Will's character is like even though he knows that he can't do anything about it, he still wants to know the why. He wants to know how he let this happen. Or not how he let this happen, but how it went under his nose. You know, watching, you know, these... Is it 9 people? Or...
It might be. I didn't count.
I don't know if it's specified.
Yeah.
But watching all of these people and you know, recording their entire lives and just making sure that.
What would even be like the purpose of like watching them?
I don't know necessarily the purpose. I guess maybe just like.
Sorry if that makes me sound like a nitpicker or anything.
No,
I just thought about it. I don't think so.
I mean, I just thought the same question. I was like, why do they even record them?
Right. Like if you can't do anything.
But I guess maybe it's just to help them understand where life is, where the world is, to help them.
Be able like, to better determine who should go into it.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I feel you. Okay. That makes sense. That makes sense. I do want to shout out the concept of this movie.
Yeah.
Would you call it high concept?
I think that's what I said in my review. On theotherfilmguys.com.
Indeed, yes. Brought to you by Matt Damon.
Dude, I loved that.
Genius.
Someone had pointed out that you could make the logo on the website anything, and it makes sense. I was like, we need our first commercial.
That's hilarious, because every time I'd watch it in the theater, that crypto.com would just always be like, I don't know, surprising every time it comes up.
I'm trying to find my review for it, because I worded it kind of specifically. It gets lifted from a high fantasy about the selection behind natural selection into a deeper drama and conversation with passion and heart.
Well said. You have a whole written review of this.
Yeah, right? that was just from my Letterboxd, which I think I pulled from the actual longer review.
That was beautiful.
Thank you.
Y'all go read it.
It was my...
Just a taste.
Not my first... I think that was my second review after Dune, I want to say. I can't remember exactly.
Nice. But yeah, I mean, very original, right? I mean...
Yeah. I mean, it is... Ed Sonoda has said that, I mean, it sort of is a spiritual sequel in his mind to Afterlife, which is a Japanese film. I have the criterion for it, but I haven't seen it. And it sort of is similar in concept somewhat. And then, of course, a lot of people and myself have sort of related to Soul. Pixar's movie from last year. But I think this one did it a lot better than Soul. I connected way better.
Not even close. Yeah. Not even, which is like kind of unfortunate, because I mean, with animation, like you're just able to do some wild shit. And I feel like if that concept was executed well, I don't know. I feel like you really could have made some magic happen with that.
Soul could have been incredible.
Yeah.
And to some people it was, and that's great if you connected to it on that level, but I did not. I had a really hard time watching Soul.
I thought it was very mid.
Yeah. I thought the concept is always interesting, of course, like, what does it mean to be human? What does it mean to have the gift of life? What does it mean for all of this? Why are we here? I always love those questions, but not everyone handles it well.
Concept and execution, and this movie has both.
Yeah.
9 days.
Exactly.
It's Winston Duke's character, Will. He's like this interviewer in this purgatory-like realm.
Like pre-life, sort of post-death, in a way.
Yeah. In this desert setting. Can't see anything around for miles. It's just his house in this desert setting. And these people / unborn souls, they just kind of like appear and they gravitate towards his house. And after one of the people that he watches dies, you know, he gets to pick who takes that person's place. And he has 9 days to choose who is worthy to live. And I don't know, like, I do movies like that. I mean, it's just nice to see something original, I guess. Yeah. Mostly original, you know what I'm saying?
I mean,
done with more genuine intentions, you know?
I mean, I feel like even though there are similar concepts, I mean, this is a very original movie. I mean, you don't have too many things that are, you know, like this introspective that are set in like pretty much one location, desolate place. With pretty limited people on screen at any given time. There's really only ever, at the most, three.
Mm, yeah, for sure. Executed really well. Trying to think of all the candidates that passed through. The guy that played Pennywise on It.
Bill Skarsgård.
Bill Skarsgård, yes. He was good as well. I really liked watching him. It was...
Kane.
Yes, yeah. I really enjoyed watching him. I don't think I've really... He's gotten, you know, kind of a pretty big platform from his Pennywise role. So I don't know if I can remember.
And he's got the Skarsgård blood.
Right. Yeah. Which, I mean, those guys are great actors. So, yeah. And it was nice being able to watch him, you know, play something that he could, that was very like low key, something where he was like this mixture of like toughness and sensitivity. You know what I mean? Really a guy that I can see myself hanging out with, type of thing. I really liked watching him and Zazie Beetz and Will and Benedict Wong. I really liked watching all of them in that that dinner scene together towards the end.
Yeah, that one, that was a really good scene. Like, where they're telling their like gross stories, and he
tells one
that's, you know, it's gross, it's disgusting, but
not in the way that,
not in a dinner table storytelling kind of way. It's more of life is fucked up.
Yeah, exactly. Which, I don't know, I also kind of like that, like how like there are various meanings to that word. And
exactly, I mean, by definition, it is disgusting.
Yeah, agreed. And nobody at that table disagreed or anything. But yeah, and which also kind of made the next sequence kind of more of a gut punch whenever Will gets him and Zazie Beetz in the same room, and he's like, okay, now that you've gotten to know each other, tell me why the person next to you doesn't deserve to live.
Yeah.
And
it's a fucked up game show.
Yeah, no, literally. And which I love Zazie's reaction where like
she just walks out, right?
Yeah. They don't even like entertain the question. Neither of them say anything. Zazie just gets up and leaves. And it's like, okay, well, I guess you get to live now.
Which, I mean, and then, you know, that reaction, I think, is maybe one of the reasons why she actually did deserve, I think, to go through, mm-hmm. rather than Kane. As I think it's said throughout the movie, he's scared to give it to someone who was like him.
Yeah, right.
Sensitive.
And Zazie, like, her character, she chooses to really, like, see more positive aspects of life. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I mean, which I like, you know, just the broader theme to that. You know, living is choosing. You know what I mean? Like, you're always choosing, and you choose not that you choose what you see, but you choose what you take from what you're seeing. If that makes sense.
Yeah, you choose how you look at the world.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
Right. You can look at it and see the beauty and the wonder and the amazement, or you can be more like Kane, where you see all the pain, the hurt, the death and destruction, the nasty parts of life, and want to do something more to fix it. Or you can be like someone, like I said, you know, like Emma, Zazie Beetz's character, and see the beauty and want to cherish that and ignore all of the darkness in the world and just try and live life to the fullest.
Which I think it was great watching that dynamic, because I feel like Kane is more pessimistic than optimistic. I'm not going to say he's totally like not complete, you know, nihilist, pessimistic. But I would say he's more pessimistic than optimistic. Whereas Zazie Beetz, I feel like she's, you know, full on optimistic. You know what I mean? And so I just really enjoyed watching them and that dynamic just kind of interact with each other. And it was just nice to see that play out. So both actors really performed really well. Everybody really shines in this movie.
I know you're not too familiar with him, with his other work and everything, but I really actually liked Tony Hale. I was surprised too.
He was annoying the shit out of me.
Yeah. But I mean, like, that's another aspect of people in life who just like, why don't we just all relax, have a good time?
Yeah.
Have some beers. Slap some steaks on the grill.
I was mad that he made it so far. I was.
Yeah, that would have been one of my first to cut.
Yeah, literally. I'm not even gonna call that a complaint, but
no, I mean, it's not. I mean, I can sort of argue for why he could make it farther, because I mean, he's maybe someone that would be an interesting addition to see how they play out in life.
Because there are a lot of people like him.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. Like, I feel like, I'm not going to say most people are like him, but there's a good chunk of people who are just like,
definitely,
bro, let's just like, you know, this is who so heavy, like, you know, why we got to talk about serious stuff? You know what I'm saying?
Like the serious stuff, the hard stuff of life just makes them uncomfortable. And there's a lot of people that I know personally in life that are exactly like that. So yeah, I mean, it's just showing the different people in life and
Definitely. That's a good way to put it. Yeah, this movie really shows the range of people that you can encounter. The range of humanity. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, which is, yeah.
I think it would have been interesting to, like, capture someone who was evil.
Yeah, but I guess that person, well,
I can see why they wouldn't have done it. It wouldn't, I don't think it would have highlighted the film's point at all.
Yeah. Yeah, which I think those people, I guess, are represented, but they're mostly like in the screens,
in already like in life, you know, like Mark's or
like the people that Rick's bully encounters, yeah.
Rick's bullies,
the person that shot Fernando.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
Yeah, for sure.
So that the range of humanity. That's a good point. I like that. I hadn't thought about that. Beautiful. That makes me appreciate it.
It's a gorgeous
more.
Movie.
Yeah. Yeah. Heck yeah.
Who shot this? Because I really love the cinematography as well. His name? Wyatt Garfield.
Wyatt Garfield?
Yeah.
Okay.
Wyatt Garfield, though.
Yeah. Now, like I said, there are some magnificent shots in the movie. Like yeah. I said, I really love watching Winston whenever he would blow up. It would always be Amanda's screen that he would blow up on the wall. And I would just love watching him in the foreground, you know, with cameras behind him and Amanda's in further in the background, and just watching him be engulfed in that image of her. And once her video would end and he would just be washed in this blue light. And just the way he's lit, like it just looks fantastic. And
yeah,
this movie's gorgeous. This whole podcast is just me gushing about it. You know what I mean? Because I can't really think of anything here. I don't like about it.
I mean, that's why I gave it a 5-star, which we'll get into in shortly here. I have nothing wrong with this movie. I can't necessarily complain about, you know, other than like small things that don't actually matter for the movie.
What I've noticed about, have you made a top 10 list?
I have.
You have? Okay. Yeah. I don't think I've seen it yet. But for a lot of my movies that I picked, and for our favorite movies, introspection really like is at the center of them, and this movie does that beautifully. And like I said, it's a joyous movie, and it, for me anyway, it just reminds me to appreciate life more and appreciate that there are several different types of people out there. There's no one way to live. There's no one way to exist. Bad shit happens to good people.
Good shit happens to bad people.
Yeah. You know,
it's life.
It is life indeed. And it, for me, it, you know, it does remind me, I do love Zazie's performance, because it, you know, again, is a reminder that you can choose to be really pessimistic and just see like the really fucked up parts of life. Like that's easy to see, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But it's an active decision to not overlook it, but to give the same attention, if not more attention, to the brighter parts of life and things that actually that do matter.
Exactly. That's very well said.
Yeah. So I don't think I really have any much more to say about the movie, to be honest.
I don't either. I mean, we've been talking about it almost 40 minutes, so we can go ahead and go on to final opinions. Let's like I said, I gave this a 5. It's my favorite movie of the year. I mean, I think that's pretty self-explanatory.
Do you want to give like a rundown of your top 10?
Yeah, I was going to give my top 10, and I was going to maybe wait to do your top 10 until maybe next week's with your favorite episode. Yeah. So
let's do it.
My top 10, other than 9 Days at number 1, I have Drive My Car by Ryosuke Hamaguchi as number 2. Mass by Fran Kranz, number 3. PTA's Licorice Pizza, number 4. The Worst Person in the World, directed by Joachim Trier, number 5. Mike Mills' Come On, Come On, number 6.
Oh, that's another movie that I hadn't seen that I really want to watch.
That's Come On, Come good. On.
That's all that like consistently ranks near the top of everybody's.
I'll send it to you.
Oh, fuck yeah. Let's go. Okay.
Pablo Lorraine Spencer, number 7.
Plug right here.
Number 8, The Matrix Resurrections.
Hell yeah.
Number 9, The Green Knight. Number 10, Petite Maman.
That is a solid list right there.
And I guess I'll give some honorable mentions, because there were some that I really loved but didn't make like the top 10. Power of the Dog, Memoria, Pig, Dune, Red Rocket, French Dispatch, and Bad Luck Banging or Loony Porn.
Good year for movies, no?
Oh, I think I was really shaky at the start. I was like, I don't know, man. I mean, we're getting a new PTA this year, and And I mean, I'm excited for that, and you know, Dune and everything like that. Like the blockbuster, I was like, yeah, I mean, it could turn out pretty well. And then the actual like good movies started coming out. I was like, well, damn, this is a banger year.
Because a lot of those, you know, not to say that they came out of left field, but you know, like
I think some of them did. I mean, I wasn't expecting to love The Worst Person in the World as much as I was.
That's the number one that comes to mind.
I was really excited for Mass, and I was finally able to see it, and I'm so glad that I was. I think Red Rocket came out of left field. I wasn't expecting to like that as much as I did.
Mm-hmm.
Come on, I was sort of expecting to love. And then I think, you know, the biggest, you know, left fielder for me was this, 9 Days.
Yeah, no, for sure.
I didn't expect this to be my number one movie.
Drive My Car is another one.
Yeah, that's,
you know what I'm saying?
I kind of did expect to love that one so much. It got so much love. I think it premiered at Cannes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Got so much love and attention at there, and I was glad to finally see it.
Heck yeah. Well, my final opinion is just short of, I think I gave this a 4.5 out of 5.
I think so, yeah.
The movie's fire. Y'all should go watch it. One complaint that I saw about it was that it, you know, kind of drags. It's slowly paced, but I don't know. I didn't encounter that problem. Yeah, I didn't encounter that.
Mileage may vary, but I thought it went pretty smoothly.
Me too. So, I mean, just listen to everything that came before this if you want to know how I feel about the movie. It's great. Go watch it.
All right, so let's do some bad reviews. This first one comes from Ella. It's a half-star review. It's probably not fair that I'm reviewing this considering I could only stomach about 40 minutes of it. Yes, that is unfair to then review it. But I can't imagine it got any better after I stopped. Something about this made me want to crawl out of my skin. Just completely unbearable on every level. Like one of those weird Christian movies. As someone who has grown up in a heavily Christian family and saw a lot of Christian movies, how fucking dare you?
Yeah,
Christian. When you have the likes of God Is Not Dead.
Bro, they a different breed. Christian movies, they a different breed. Propaganda.
You got the fucking Christian movies, you got the Hallmark, the Lifetime movies.
Yeah.
Those are, you know, in the dark corner over there that we don't talk about.
Yeah. Oh, man. I guess, okay, for me, the movie, I guess the weakest parts from the movie come, like, from the beginning. But, like, once we, like, really settle into the story and the concept and the characters, but then I think it really takes off.
I mean, it takes, I think, about 10 minutes to settle into, like, the concept right, of everything.
Right, yeah. It's not something where I'm like, nah, fuck this movie. But yeah. Okay, so let me see. Okay, so their letterboxed name is just like a bunch of letters. Flim blows.
I just saw that one, yeah.
Okay. Half star. A movie for middle-class white neo-lib 20-somethings who punctuate inane arguments on Twitter.com with the phrase, touch grass. I don't know.
Touching grass is not enough. I need a gun.
Oh no.
Let's see.
I have one if you want to keep looking.
I just found one.
Okay.
Liam says, boring, terrible performances and a weird pro-life undertone. One for that dude in your English to mansplain to you. What?
See, I just don't. I don't get any hate towards the performances.
I thought that was maybe probably like the strongest thing. People have said that it's that no one knows restraint in this movie, and I know that got you going.
Especially like with Winston Duke's character, because that performance is all restraint.
Yeah.
Except for, like I said, very carefully placed moments where he lashes out.
But it works.
It works. Because to me, there's intent and purpose behind that. And I don't know. I really just don't get the hate towards any of the performances.
Me neither.
Because it's like there are limited sets in this movie. You know what I mean? Most of it takes place in the house, in different rooms in the house. Some of it takes place outside. In this desert setting, which I don't know if that was like shot on location or like on a set green screen or whatever.
Probably, I think they filmed it. They filmed it in Utah, okay. I think. So I think it was filmed on location.
Okay. So I mean, it's one of those movies where a lot of the work is coming from the actors. You know what I mean? For that emotional charge. You know what I'm saying? and the cinematography just kind of expands on them. So I don't know. I don't get that. But anyways, here's Breeze's half star rating. Everything was predictable. I know some film dudes are going to hype it up, but it's not great at all.
Hello, we are those film dudes.
Now, just because is a movie, did you find it predictable? You know what I'm saying?
Like, maybe to a sense, but I don't think that's a fault to a movie.
Because I'm watching it and...
Not everything has to be this twisty, windy...
That's what I'm thinking.
Whiplash giving...
Like, just because... Okay, so like I'm watching it and like, I don't know, me personally, like I figured Zazie Beetz's character probably wasn't going...
I mean, it was hinted throughout the entire thing, yeah.
Right, but does that mean it's bad?
Not at all. I don't think, anyways.
I think as long as the story is told in a well-executed way, it doesn't fucking matter if it's predictable. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
I don't know.
Don't agree.
Don't
Sorry.
Agree.
All right. Now for a positive review. I have this one from Aki Menzies. It's a 4-star review. But Aki says, this is a really astonishing debut from writer-director Edson Oda, led by Winston Duke's heart-wrenching A-plus performance. The film's exploration of existential concepts is sometimes too superficial for its serious tone, and some conversations seem cut off before reaching their true depth. Regardless, 9 Days is an ambitious story that often touches greatness, delivering a very emotionally satisfying cinematic experience. I think for the most part, I definitely agree.
Yeah, especially for the ending of the movie, I think very... emotionally satisfying. Like, that's exactly the best way to put that.
Yeah, just finally seeing Winston Duke, like, I think also, like, just came at peace with himself and
mm-hmm. and just cut loose, like, yeah. He just, like I said, the word joy is the only one that comes to mind.
I mean, like you said, you know, performing like that, you know, he couldn't do because it would make him feel human again.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what he needed, was that push from Zazie to do that.
You could tell that Winston, the actor, like, he was having fun.
Oh, absolutely.
Know, doing that, which, I mean, I'm sure that was just, like, for him, like, a callback to his stage acting days, you know? So I'm sure that wasn't too difficult a transition to do. So it was just great to watch.
Fun, great movie.
All right. Steven Tronicek's 4.5-star review. Takes the basic conceptual ideas of Corrieta's afterlife and builds a new existential tale. Duke is astounding here, which, yes,
agree.
I'm glad we are all in agreement that Winston Duke went off with this one.
Hard agree.
Man's went off.
All right. So with that, I think we'll get into movies we watched over the last week. I'll let you... tee off.
Alrighty then. So let me see. All right. So I got a couple movies in, I guess. Yeah. All right. So after watching Licorice Pizza, I think I talked about The Souvenir on the last episode. Yes, I did.
Yeah, I think
the
so. Last yeah. Pod.
Okay. So after that, I watched Don't Look Up. Adam McKay's.
Don't watch the movie.
Comment. Don't look at the movie. yeah, so I watched this, the comedic satire, Don't Look Up by Adam McKay. It wasn't, I don't know, it was bad, but it wasn't like horrible, I guess.
I thought it was fine.
I there were some moments where I was like kind of having fun with it. I really liked watching Jonah Hill. I think Jonah Hill is an amazing comedic actor.
I think that was maybe my least favorite part.
Really?
Though.
I didn't
like him too much in the movie.
He was really funny and cool and awesome.
Did you see like the end credits scene with him?
I did. Yeah. Yeah. That part I was like, okay, I could have done without that.
Yeah.
But just him in general, I think he's a funny guy. And that's kind of like how he started as a comedic actor. So I love watching him just be funny. Because yeah. I think he does it really well.
I hated the Mark Zuckerberg-like role.
Mark Rylance, dude, I... Anyways, what else did I like or dislike about that movie? It kind of wasn't funny. I didn't like the... I thought Leo's performance was kind of bad. The writing, the material that he worked with was also kind of bad. I guess that's my biggest complaint, really, is the material he was given and the material of the movie in general.
Yeah.
I thought it was bad.
was long.
It was long. It was long.
And it felt yes. like it.
Yes, it did. But there was a Kid Cudi feature, which shout out Kid Cudi, Man on the Moon. Love him. Gonna write a role for him one day. And yeah, so not my favorite McKay really at all.
I think it's my least favorite.
Yeah.
Worse than Vice.
Yeah, Vice was pretty forgettable.
Yeah.
I watched it and haven't thought about it since.
I unfortunately am reminded of Don't Look Up all the time, every 5 minutes from Netflix.
It was definitely the hot topic on Twitter, that's for sure, when it came out.
Yeah.
And it's also one of those movies where, you know, I've seen people touch on this, where it's just kind of like confusing and like its target audience, because most of the people that watch it really agree with, you know, its message about, you know, climate change and whatnot. And in a way, I could see how it would come off as like condescending to.
I mean, where it fails, though, is like, is the world fucked or is there hope? Mm-hmm. Like, you're just saying that, you know, no matter what, we're going to fail. We're all going to die.
So in a way, I guess it come off as like very like pessimistic in that way. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. But my review for that movie was go watch First Reformed. If you want to watch something
that
artfully and genuinely, something that actually captures real despair and hope at the same time.
And you can listen to our episode on it too.
You can definitely do that, featuring Allison.
Yep.
And yeah, go check that out and go watch that movie, because yeah, that movie
First
captures,
Reformed, of course.
Yes. Yeah, go watch First Reformed, because like I said, that movie actually captures the despair and hopelessness and hope that comes with the impending climate and its change.
Yep.
So, and it's a fucking banger. All right. And then I watched The Worst Person in the World right after that. I really enjoyed watching that one. That movie also kind of reminded me of First Reformed in the way where it's like very realistic. But there's one sequence where like realism goes out the window, aside from when they take drugs and, you know, do shrooms or whatever. Of course, that, you know, that wiles out. But I'm talking about the moment where like time stops and she's running to go find.
That's the best scene.
That is, yes. That's what, for me, that's what took the movie from being really good to being excellent, in my opinion.
Yeah, exactly.
So I really love that sequence. Beautifully shot. Love the actors. What else can you really say? Great movie. I feel like it really captures, for me anyway, you know, just like our generation in general, just kind of like this general aimlessness. Yeah, so go check that out. And then I rewatched David Fincher's Seven on HBO Max. Classic. Don't need to say anything else. I watched The Lost Daughter on Netflix, which was really good.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed that. Olivia Colman is the truth. I love Olivia Colman. She's amazing.
She's incredible. She deserves everything.
Her and Jesse Buckley. Yes. Man, I've grown such an appreciation for Jesse Buckley. She is a fantastic actor. I love watching her.
She was, I liked her performance the most, I think.
See, I thought they were both equally excellent.
I mean, but they're both playing the same person, so I think maybe that plays to itself. Yeah, mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, they're both fantastic, and it can be an uncomfortable movie to watch at times. If you're on the fence about having children, this one will probably make you definitely not want to have children. at least if you're me, because I was cringing a lot.
I think Mad, from Film Twitter, said, after watching Come On, Come On, said, wow, kids are actually so amazing. Maybe I should reconsider having them when I'm older. And then after watching this, oh.
Yes, yeah, big fucking facts, because yikes. Shout out to all you parents out there.
I don't know how they do it.
I don't know how you do it. I can barely take care of myself. So my dog Astro is enough responsibility for me. And then I watched Black Widow for the first time, because I hadn't seen it. It was on a day where I had watched The Lost Daughter and 9 Days. I watched Black Widow right after watching those two. So I'd seen those three in the same day. And I just figured I needed something big and dumb to kind of balance, you know, the first two. And it wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be. I liked it better than No Way Home. I can like say that definitively. Like I just did. Much more enjoyable. It wasn't terrible. I really liked watching everybody besides ScarJo, I guess. Like, I really liked Florence Pugh.
That's how I thought. Is like, I thought every character other than Scarlett Johansson was so much more interesting.
Yes, yeah.
In her own solo movie.
Rachel Weisz, she's great.
8 years too late.
Yeah. David Harbour, fantastic. I didn't like the villain. To me, like, I didn't know what he was trying to be. He just came off as, like, this weird, like Italian, like, mob boss type of character. Russian. I don't know. I didn't know what it was.
I hated Taskmaster in that movie.
Really? I don't know.
I mean, it's not Taskmaster. I mean, it's not. Oh, well.
Watching it, all I could think of was the Taskmaster in the Spider-Man video game. Yeah.
Well, and it's so funny. I thought the same thing when I was playing it last week. And I was like, for like the 5 minutes that, you know, you're doing these side missions in Spider-Man, they did Taskmaster so much better than in the entire movie.
I guess for like, if I'm talking like visuals and design, like I like the way Taskmaster looked.
Looked like a Power Ranger.
Oh, now I can't unsee that. But yeah, so the movie wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be.
It's a fine movie.
It was fine.
It was a good summer blockbuster movie.
It was fine. I think it was like one of the first movies to have like that day and date release thing. And
did it have day and date or was it? Oh, it did. Yeah, because Scarlett Johansson
sued them. Yeah. Yeah,
and then they settled, which means she got her number. Oh yeah,
she got her number.
And it's not like she has to worry about being in any of the future Marvel movies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
because she's dead.
Right. So, yeah.
All right. Was that it?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That was all right. So we'll get to mine. I started off, I don't think I talked about it. I saw Mass. Finally came out on VOD, so I was able to check it out. And boy, were those performances incredible.
I watched the trailer for that, and I could barely get through the trailer because it was so like impactful emotionally. Yeah.
The movie is just so much even more. And it's hard. It's hard to watch.
Now, is it set like mostly in like one setting?
It's all in one location.
Okay.
All right. One room for pretty much 2 hours.
See, those type of movies like fascinate me.
And it like takes place pretty much in real time. There's not really a whole bunch of cutting around other than just changing who you're looking at.
Those movies fascinate me because there should be a lack of cutting, like you said. And a lot of it's going to come down to the actors flexing their muscles. And that's why I like, you know, movies that are adapted from like plays and stuff.
It feels like it is adapted from a play. Like that's how it feels, but I mean, it's not. Mm-hmm. Fran Kranz, I think, wrote and directed it originally, and it was really good. Jason Isaacs was incredible. Martha Plimpton and everyone else. I mean, it's the four, I think, genuinely the best performances of the year, possibly greater than that. They did do a little bit more thinking on that, but I really enjoyed it a lot. Great filmmaking. Then I checked out The Lost Daughter on Netflix. I mean, I can't say anything that you didn't say and that other people haven't said so far. It was a good movie. I liked it. 3.5 out of 5, I think. I am definitely interested to see what Maggie Gyllenhaal does going forward.
Yeah, I definitely want to see more of her stuff.
Yeah.
For sure. It was her first movie that she had directed.
Directed and written, yeah.
Yeah.
It was adapted. So I want to see what she does more because I thought the direction was really good.
Yeah, for sure.
And the script was really good, too. Then I started off the new year, January 1st. I am doing 52 weeks of Ingmar Bergman because I have the Ingmar Bergman cinema set from Criterion. And with all of these shows and episodes from Fanny and Alexander and Scenes of a Marriage, there are 52 entries. So
nice.
One day per week, I am going to be watching a different entry in that set until I've seen them all. And I started off with Smiles of a Summer Night, which I really dug. It had really, really great cinematography. And it was from 1955, which, I mean, doesn't necessarily say that it can have bad. It's not what I meant.
Mm-hmm.
But it did surprise me. It was pretty campy, and it was very light and funny, which I did not expect from a Bergman movie. And I kind of really loved.
I guess my lack of seeing Bergman films, because I've only seen The Seventh Seal. That's a Bergman movie, right? And maybe one other one. But I imagine films from like that era, 40s, 50s, for the most part, I imagine them to be pretty campy. You know what I'm saying? I mean, to be pretty lighthearted and, you know, not, I guess, like realistic.
I mean, it's not what Bergman is necessarily known for. Like, he's, they're very dark, introspective.
Which I guess The Seventh Seal is, you know, like that. Very dark and introspective.
Yeah. But yeah, I really liked that movie. Had a very interesting romance plot between two characters that I won't say. It's an interesting turn of events.
Okay.
Then I rewatched Beetlejuice with Scarlett. It's one of her favorite movies. Oh my God. You haven't seen Beetlejuice.
I've never seen Beetlejuice.
Oh my God.
Never. With Michael Keaton, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Michael Keaton. Oh shit. What's his fucking name? Alec Baldwin. He's in it. Winona Ryder. She's in it. Catherine O'Hara. Gina Davis. Really good movie. Has a whole sequence where it just completely rips off 1984's Dune, which I actually will talk about later.
Interesting.
Then I checked out another movie, Ryosaki Hamaguchi's Wheel of Fortune and Fantasy, which I really enjoyed. It's a three-part anthology film, which I'm always torn between, because my problem with anthology movies is that there's usually one story out of all of them that people will latch on to the most, and I definitely had that with this movie. The first section was what I latched onto the most, and I just wanted to see more of that.
That's hard not to do, I guess.
Yeah,
like, you can't help but compare the stories and be like, "Oh yeah, I like that one the most."
Exactly. I mean, that's how I thought with Certain Women. I liked the last story the most out of those three. So I mean, it's hard to find that balance, but I did like the movie. There were very similar like thematic choices that were done to sort of bring them all together and make it make sense as an anthology.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a good movie. It did not entrance me as much as Drive My Car did, but it was really good. I recommend checking it out.
Bet.
Rewatched 9 Days. I already talked about that for, you know, like 50 minutes. So then last night we watched David Lynch's 1984 Dune, which Scarlett really enjoyed.
I saw her tweet about it. I noticed you hadn't tweeted about it, so I was like,
I did not.
Division in the household.
It was not nearly as bad as I thought that it would be.
Uh-huh.
Already knowing the story of Dune helped a lot. But in a way that an early movie could, it really just drags you along by the hand and tells you everything you need to know and more.
Well, especially like with that movie and with that material.
Yeah.
With Dune, I mean,
in the movie, I think at the theaters and when it shipped out like for home video, they sent along like cards that you could reference the vocabulary used and shit like that. And I think that's maybe what I appreciate about Villeneuve's Dune is that, you know, I think it does a good job of explaining things and also kind of keeping you in the dark at the same time.
Yeah, for sure. But I mean, like even him, he needs two movies to do that. You know what I'm saying?
Which I think maybe if David Lynch would have had two movies, I think that probably could have been good.
Mm-hmm.
I think it could have. There was a lot of good material to work with, of course. I mean, we saw that it can be done.
Is it is it Lynchian in the way that
it is anti-Lynchian propaganda, Justin?
I don't know if I
like that. Anti-Lynchian propaganda.
I don't know if I like that.
Although he does have a featured role.
Really?
Lynch himself, yeah. He shows up and I'm like, yeah. And like some of the characters are like carrying around like pugs and cats and it's the most confusing shit ever.
That's hilarious. Got to be like his most commercial movie that he's probably done, I would say.
You can tell that he did not have a lot of joy making the movie.
I think he's talked about that too.
Yeah, there were several cuts of the movie where he had his name completely removed and went by a pseudonym instead.
Wow.
And then studio I think added it for the final cut and did not like that.
Dang.
He didn't anyways.
That's tough.
But honestly, it was fine. The score, which it was composed by Toto, Africa Toto. The score actually went kind of hard.
Okay.
I'm not going to lie. I kind of liked it more than
the actual movie.
Than Hans Zimmer's.
I mean, I haven't listened to Toto's score, obviously, but I have not been on the hype train for Hans Zimmer's score for Dune.
I'm not that into it.
I'm not either. Yeah. Which is funny because a lot of Villeneuve's movies, I feel like, have really strong score.
Yeah.
And in Dune, I guess it's unique, but I don't know. Like, it just didn't really
hit
me.
And I think I was expecting to maybe, like, the problem was we were expecting it to be one of the greatest ones, because I think Hans Zimmer said, you know, he's been waiting his whole life to do something like Dune, mm-hmm. and skipped out on Tenet so that he could score Dune instead. And I thought, like, it could have been done by anybody.
Yeah.
I didn't see or hear anything, rather, anything that was too remarkable, and nothing that stuck in my head.
Yeah, for sure. Really, the biggest score slash music sound that, like, sticks out to me from Villeneuve's Dune is the fucking women wailing.
Yeah.
Or whatever, which I don't know, that was like, they were overkill on that sound to begin with. And yeah. I don't know, it just might not be in good taste. So I don't know. But yeah.
Yeah. Anyways, Dune 1984 is a worse movie than 2021 Dune, but has a better score. So I'll just say that. And then lastly, this morning I watched Pablo Larraín's Jackie. And I really loved that. Natalie Portman was so good as Jackie Kennedy. They also had a really good, I mean, he's barely in it, of course, because it takes place after the assassination of John F. Kennedy, but they have him in the movie, and the guy that they got for it looked like exactly like,
but he's never like explicitly exactly like shown on camera, right? Is he just kind of, they just kind of like show glances at
his
face,
couple,
or whatever?
There's a couple moments where like he is like prominently on screen. I don't think he has any lines or anything, but mm-hmm. I mean, you see it and it's like, that is JFK.
Okay. I saw that movie a long time ago, probably when I was like first getting into movies. I watched it on my little laptop that was like 5x5.
I'd never seen it before. And after Spencer, I was like, well, I got to check it out. And I really did like it. I think Spencer's better, especially because it states outright that this is like a fable of, you know, like what could have been. Because, I mean, Jackie is the same thing, where like a lot of it is sort of speculation, I guess, more than anything. So we got that going for it, but. I really enjoyed the movie. Really great cinematography, really great performances, and Pablo Larraín is a director I'm definitely going to keep more tabs on.
Nice.
And that is it.
Fire.
All right.
Good stuff.
So that brings us to the end of this episode, Zach's favorite of the year. So Justin, why don't you tell the people what we're going to be talking about next week?
Well, folks, we are going to be watching Drive My Motherfucking Car.
Fuck
next
yeah.
week is what we're going to be Ryusuke. Talking about. Yes. Listen next week for my thoughts on it, because the movie's fucking fantastic.
Yeah.
So if you
got, I think I'm gonna try to rewatch it again.
I am definitely gonna watch it again. So if you got 3 hours to kill, I promise they fly by.
Oh my god, yeah, they do.
Sit down and watch it and be ready to feel something.
Yes. All right. Well, again, that brings us to the end. So come back next week for Drive My Car. And if you guys have any questions, comments, or concerns, you can reach us on social media at Other Film Guys. I myself am at Livin' Mediocre.
I'm at Rocketman3. Just replace that O with a zero.
And this is your friendly reminder at the end of the episode to go rate and review us on whatever platform you're listening. It helps people find us and helps us know that you actually like our show. Always helps out. And if you do like our show, you can consider subscribing on Apple Podcasts to the Bonus Film Guys, where we have drunk commentaries, which we're hoping to get back on soon, and you can listen to these episodes early. I post them on Apple Podcasts for the Bonus Film Guys as soon as I'm done editing them up, which is usually the day that we record them. So $4.99 a month US, so check it out, please give us money.
Yes.
All right, guys, well, again, thank you so much for listening. Have a wonderful rest of your day. Go out and be safe.
Y'all be well.